trying to operate in a system that's not built for you, like really not built for you, can be extremely dysregulating, as I have recently found out. And hopefully once I'm through the situation, I will be able to talk more about it. But the truth is, a lot of spirituality, at least as it's commonly thought about, at least as it's commonly practiced, is not designed for neurodivergent individuals. When you add that to the fact that basically, because of our Western model of mind and body being two separate things, which, let's be honest, we know is a joke, because our brain is inside our body. Our brain is part of our body. And everything that comes from our body, our brain, our heart, all of that is a part of us. And you really can't separate it out, like trying to put rice in one container and flour in another container. When you add all of that together, what that means is that spirituality isn't built for neurodivergent people, and it's not seen as essential for functioning. And I guess I want to spend a little bit of time this week talking about that and maybe breaking some misconceptions. This is the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show. Hi, I'm Kit Kailstill, your host, and welcome to this week's show. As I alluded to, I've been dealing with some things, and so there's been a break in the recording, and I'm hoping to get back on a rhythm here. So let's talk about spirituality. One of the things that I have been talking about for a long time and really invested in, especially as I have gone through this process of getting my master's degree, is looking at silos and how our society walls things off to where, like, they don't touch. And I say that, and I kind of smile as I say that, because something I do when I try to eat dinner is you try to get your food not to touch. And, you know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. But that's something that's a very common experience for neurodivergent people, is that there's these silos. And the truth is that spirituality and human flourishing is a lot like Rocky Road ice cream, or the Ben and Jerry's flavor fish food, which I ate a lot of in my 20s. That would be like how I got through my 20s, was Ben and Jerry's fish food. But you got chocolate ice cream, and there's marshmallow fluff whipped into it, caramel whipped into it, and like in the case of fish food, there were these little chocolate fish or just little, you know, chocolate pieces, moose tracks, bunny tracks, whatever kind of Rocky Road type ice cream that you like, if you like that. That works great for this metaphor. Because human flourishing is a lot like that. If you take that Rocky Road ice cream and you pull out the marshmallow and you pull out the caramel and you pull out the chocolate pieces and put all of those in different bowls from your chocolate ice cream, you could make a Rocky Road-like sundae if you put them all together, but that's not going to be the same as Rocky Road ice cream. And so human flourishing, or, you know, human prospering, whatever, you know, realization, whatever word you want to use there. The public health people talk about human flourishing a lot. There's even an institute for it at a major college. That if you take spirituality out of that, you're missing a lot of interconnected pieces. And yet, spirituality is not thought about with neurodivergent people. You know, it's not something that people talk to us about. It's also something that's not built for us. And that's what I want to expand on in this week's show. Let me make one thing clear here. I am a big proponent of personal spirituality and of each of us finding our ways of connecting with ourselves, with other individuals, with the natural world, with animals, with the wider universe, in ways that feel really meaningful and authentic to us, in ways that really drive our passions. Spirituality, however, as a lot of people think about it more on par with religion. And spirituality and religion are not the same things. Religion, you know, you can use, people have been trying to define religion for a very long time. There's tons of different definitions out there. I pretty much like the simple definition of making order out of chaos. And so if you think about various groups of people trying to make order out of chaos, and this works for any modern religious tradition, even ones we don't agree with, or it works when you think about it in a historical sense, that everybody is just trying to make some order out of chaos that makes sense to them or has meaning to them. There's a lot of things that go into this. I certainly can't go into all of them in like a 20-minute podcast. There are the stories that we tell each other. There's the stories that are told to us. That's why spiritual storytelling is a huge component of the work I do. What stories are meaningful for you? There's also a lot of coming into our authentic selves. I heard a story, I heard a myth actually the other day from a podcast I listened to. And it's a myth from India, and it talks about a tiger cub that ended up being raised by goats. And when the tiger cub encountered another tiger, it acted like a goat, but then quickly realized it was a tiger and it came into its authentic self. And so when we think about that, the ideal goal of religion, of spirituality, really should be to help us step into our divine being. And when I say divine, I mean that connected, ethereal, spiritual, like looking at the stars, like when you look at a picture from like the James Webb telescope and you just kind of get that, oh, wow, feeling. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about divine. Not related to any specific deity, nothing like that. But when we step into our divine, our kind of inspirational, oh wow, sense of self. When we step into that, that quite often needs to happen outside of spiritual structures that we grew up with or that we were raised with. And a great example is being neurodivergent. We don't just arbitrarily follow rules as a regular rule. That's kind of funny, actually, now that I say that out loud. But as a common occurrence, most neurodivergent people don't usually follow arbitrary rules. You want to know why. Why am I doing this? What is this supposed to show? And in fact, the situation I'm going through that I kind of have to be vague about, that's part of my problem with it right now, which is, you know, I'm doing something and it feels absolutely meaningless. And why am I doing this? And it's really frustrating. But anyway, you know, when you're enmeshed in spiritual systems or academic systems or employment systems or even cultural systems, any system that pretty much makes you follow arbitrary rules without telling you the why behind them. When you do that, that really starts to zap all of the meaning from those systems. And so it's that sort of behavior that I'm really thinking about when I say that religion and spirituality is not built in our current cultural sense for neurodivergent people, and why it is so important that we create our own meaning, that we create our own spirituality to make sure that we know why we're doing something. How does this process begin? it's not an easy process to deconstruct your own spirituality and find ways to make it work for you. In my case, it's involving a lot of personal reflection, a lot of personal thought. It actually involves a lot of knowledge and being introduced to new things. Where I'm at in my spirituality and the work that I want to do right now today as I'm recording this, which is the middle of February 2026, is certainly not where I was at in my spirituality 2 years ago, 4 years ago. And it took learning a lot about myself, but it also took being in a space where I could actually breathe. And that may sound a bit hyperbolic. I have to breathe to survive. We all do. But when I say breathe, what I mean is to be able to step away from the traumatic experiences that I and many other neurodivergent people experience on a daily basis in our lives. You know, being able to step away and being able to understand a lot of those experiences and being able to understand why things are happening and how things are happening. And most importantly, that those things are not happening because there's something wrong with us or there's something broken. The biggest barrier to spirituality, and I guess talk about burying the lead. I probably should have started with this. The biggest barrier to spirituality I have found is that sense of not being accomplished. I want to say unaccomplishment, but that's totally not a word. The sense of somehow being a failure. The sense of somehow not being able to human as well as other people, as well as other humans, that feeling that our society tends to just really generate in neurodivergent people and really kind of drill down and hammer on, that those feelings are the biggest barrier to spirituality that I have encountered. And I will tell you, it's taken finding an amazing therapist. It's also taking being willing to understand and look at my nervous system, being able to understand my nervous system, and being able to work on regulating my nervous system. Now, that is always an ongoing project for me. And that is always an ongoing project for pretty much all of us if we actually give ourselves the time to stop and think about it. And that's the problem, that for most of us, we don't have the time to stop and think about it because the world keeps demanding more, 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 and doesn't give us the time to breathe and actually create the space so we can do things like find our self-realization. So we can focus on what lights us up, what we're passionate about, or even think about those things. Like, and I'll use myself as an example. I've always had a very close relationship with animals. I had a lot of pets growing up, cats, dogs, hamsters, turtles. I love turtles. And so, you know, people have always associated me with a great and deep caring for animals and having a lot of companion animals in my life. But I really wasn't able to be exposed to the work I want to do, which is veterinary or animal chaplaincy, which is to really be a chaplain to speak to that relationship that we have spiritually with the natural world. Really getting into the wild church movement. There's a lot going on and a lot that I hope to be working on this year. That, in fact, I start a program for veterinary chaplaincy this fall. So very excited about that. But I wouldn't have those opportunities if I hadn't been able to be open to and exposed to new things. I saw my Facebook feed an advertisement for a pet grief counselor course to become a certified pet grief counselor. As somebody who has had a lot of senior companions over the years, as somebody who actually just recently sent one of our senior kitties across the Rainbow Bridge, I know how important those relationships are, and I know how important those relationships are to my community. Whether it is the deep connection that a lot of neurodivergent individuals have with their companion animals. You know, for many of us, our cats, our dogs, my horses are the only ones who really understand me and who we can really open up to. Obviously, I'm working on that. I'm hoping to help other people work on that as well. But we share a deep, deep, deep relationship with our animals. And likewise, the grief of their loss is quite often dismissed. The phrase you hear all the time, get over it. It's just a cat. It's just a dog. And the truth is, scientific studies have shown that losing an animal is like losing a member of your family. So I digressed a little bit, but I saw that ad for the pet grief counselor, signed up for their course. I'm currently taking that course, and that's a service I hope to bring to people. But also through that course, I found out about the American Association of Veterinary Chaplains. And I was like, wait a minute, I think I've just found my people. But I could not have done that, and I could not have found that kind of clarity if I wasn't already in this space thinking about my spirituality, thinking about what things mean to me, and thinking about helping other people with their spirituality. So that, again, long story, apologize for the digression, but that is why I think for my beloved neurodivergent community, and I will add for my beloved chronically ill and disabled community, that a lot of times the isms of the system don't want us to think about that. Because if we start thinking about ourselves as divine spiritual beings, then we might think that we deserve the same rights and the same accommodations as everybody else. Of course we do. I'm being sarcastic there. But we, of course, deserve the same rights, the same respect, the same accommodations, the same agency, the same advocacy that everybody else does. But the system sure would like to think about us as an other that isn't normative. And that's what a lot of autistic coaching and autistic and neurodivergent behavior work is based upon. Now, I feel like it's changing, but there's still quite a lot of friction within that space. And a lot of that friction, I believe, has to do with the fact that there are individuals out there who don't believe that we can have fulfilling spiritual lives, that we are somehow deficient in some way rather than being whole and complete just as we are. So what do we do about this? How do we make the change that we need for our spiritual lives? I think the first thing is simply realizing and understanding that your spirituality and your spiritual conceptions and your spiritual life, more or less, is not going to look the same as other people's spiritual lives. And however that has meaning for you, then that is perfectly just fine. That you are free to find meaning in your own way, that all of this is a construct. And so it's not like you're going to do it wrong if you take what works for you and leaves the rest. The other thing is, I think we need to start talking about creating neurodivergent and neuroaffirming spiritual spaces. I think we need to talk about creating our own spiritual groups, our own spiritual spaces, our own spiritual places where we can come together without the judgment that often comes from neurotypicals in these spaces. And I think that's where I'm going to leave this for today. Creating our own spaces is something that I've been thinking a lot about. And I think it's something that I'll be talking more about in the future. If any of this resonated with you, I would love to hear your thoughts. You can drop them on a comment on the post or platform where you're hearing this. You can also go ahead and, you know, go to my website, feathermanesoul.com, and send me an email through the contact form. While you're there, grab my free yoga nidra retreat and start getting in contact with your body. And next time, I'm going to talk about how regulating your nervous system works with spirituality. Thank you. You've been listening to the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kailstow. Learn more about Feather Mane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. Kit's passionate about embodied living and finding authentic joy by connecting with yourself and others. Kit loves working with neurodivergent, chronically ill, or disabled individuals, as well as anyone who wants to reclaim the stories and find new stories for them. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting the podcast website and following the links to Muse Charmer. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow the podcast at your favorite podcast listening or social media site. Thank you.